Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is December the 16th, and it is 2016. The year is almost over. I'm also happy to report, all things considered, that the Obama administration is almost over, but we'll get to that shortly. I thank you for joining me. Always great to catch up with you at the end of the week. In this case, nearly at the end of the year, to take a look back at the stuff that's been going on. Those of you who are familiar with me, familiar with the program, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, the agency that is responsible, or at least is supposed to be responsible, for making certain that our immigration laws are enforced, that our borders are secured. Of course, under the current administration, God only knows what they thought the mission was, but certainly it's not the mission that everybody seems to have thought that it was. But as I say, that is soon to be a matter of the past, no longer a matter of the present. So that's something that we should all be very thankful for. Again, I'm very happy to join you, and I want to remind all of you, if you're not familiar with the work that I do, that I write for several websites, capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization, terrific group of folks out on the West Coast. I also write for Front Page Magazine. That's where the great majority of my articles can be found these days. And I write for The Social Contract. So but what I want to talk about today, though, right off the bat, I was a guest on J.D. Hayworth's program on Newsmax. Newsmax, of course, still covers the immigration issue in a way that it should be covered, something that increasingly we're not finding from the mainstream media. So many factors are involved, so many reasons why we don't have the kind of coverage that we should be having where immigration is concerned and other issues as well. But immigration in particular is something that seems to have truly ignited the flames for the mainstream media, because quite frankly, many people are making far too much money off of the immigration issue, whether it's corporations looking for cheap labor, whether it's the travel industry, whether it's schools. Right now, there's over or almost 1.25 million, 1.25 million foreign students attending schools in the United States. There's so many organizations, so many individuals, so many industries that quite literally are making out like bandits on the immigration issue. And so increasingly it's difficult to get the message out there, but that's the purpose for my program. It's why I am so honored and privileged to be on many radio programs. And I've become something of a regular with J.D. Hayworth on his terrific program on Newsmax. And his show is called Newsmax Prime. Well, this past December 13th, just a couple days ago, I got an email from his producer, and I was stunned because I found out that, you know, when you think you know what's going on, you suddenly find out that, well, maybe you don't know everything that's going on. I consider it to be trying to sip from a fire hydrant. So much happening, so difficult to keep up with it all. And the producer over at Newsmax called my attention to a Breitbart story that had just been published the day before. This was December 12th. And the title, Watchdog, Obama Spent $100 Million to Transport Foreign Migrants to Their U.S. Destinations. And I was asked, do you want to come on the program and weigh in on that? And another story that appeared on Town Hall Magazine. And this story, again, blows my mind. It'll probably blow your mind. Obama administration requiring employees in the U.S. to speak English is discriminatory. So where do we go from there? Let's start out with the English language issue. It's an issue that's very close to my heart. My degree was in communications arts and sciences. You know, if we can't communicate with each other, we create in our country a Tower of Babel. The notion that requiring employees of a company to speak English being an act of discrimination leaves me stunned, thunderstruck. We're being told by the open borders anarchists that we are supposed to embrace with open arms people who evade the inspections process at ports of entry. In case of point, the other story about the $100 million spent by the Obama administration to move primarily those unaccompanied minors that have been surging across the southwest border from Central America into the United States. Well, Obama decided to spend that money to unite them with their families in the United States or anybody else who would have them. Think about that. Under the immigration laws, transporting illegal aliens is a criminal act. If you or I did it, we'd go to jail. They would seize our vehicles. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324. It's part of the smuggling statutes, which, by the way, are being violated by sanctuary cities and sanctuary universities, harboring, shielding, aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, and transporting aliens to facilitate their entry and their ability to remain in the United States illegally thereafter. So we'll get back to that. But understand that we're supposed to say, oh, it's wonderful that they're here. The heck with the fact that we have a lawful process whereby we admit more immigrants than the rest of the world combined. We admit 1 million lawful immigrants every year. These are people that are given green cards, immediately placed on the pathway to citizenship. And every year we naturalize, we give citizenship to hundreds of thousands of new citizens, again, more than the rest of the world combined. What's the point to a legal system if it doesn't matter how you come here? Why do we spend $14 billion a year on customs and border protection? But now we're being told that if people come from other countries, while we're supposed to accept them, ladies and gentlemen, apparently they do not have to accept us. They don't have to accept our laws because we've created sanctuaries where anarchy reigns, and they don't have to learn English. God forbid they might become members of our society. And this is something that impacts lawful immigrants as well. You know, I don't believe that any nation should have or at least this country should have a national religion. You know, I love the fact that we have freedom of religion in this country. You can worship as you wish, as long as by worshiping you don't think you need to go out and kill people. I'm fine with that. I think just about all Americans are. That's fair. That's reasonable. But a common language, folks, is the mortar that holds a society together. Without a common language, you wind up with a Tower of Babel. And that's apparently what the agenda of the administration, and I hate to say the Democrats because I'm registered as a Democrat. I can't remember the last time I voted for a Democrat. I think the wheels have come off their wagon. But this idea that it is discriminatory to insist that employees of a company speak English while they're working is an act of discrimination just leaves me thunderstruck. And in fact, this is the gist of the article that was posted in Town Hall, and it was December 11th, again, within the past week. And let me read from the article. Under new rules put forth by the Obama administration, it is now considered discriminatory for companies in the United States to require that employees speak English, but it is okay to require that workers speak a foreign language. Now think about that. You can apply for a job at a McDonald's and be told, well, we can only hire you if you speak Spanish or Chinese or Russian, perhaps. I don't know. Pick a language. But the employer cannot say to the employees, you have to be able to speak English. So what happens when an English-speaking customer shows up looking for a hamburger and fries? Tell them, I don't understand you. This is America. My mom came to the United States from Poland as a 14 or 13-year-old girl. Her family had split up. She was living by herself in a rooming house and worked in an umbrella factory for the amazing sum of $3 per week. This was just before the Depression. And her first order of business was to learn to speak English. My dad's parents came to the United States at the turn of the last century from Russia. It was Russia, Romania, Bessarabia. You know how those borders keep switching? We see what's happening now with Russia flexing its muscle in the Ukraine. So my grandparents, my father's parents, and some of his siblings came here. The first order of business was to learn English. My grandfather, and I was named for him, his name was Willie, my middle name is William. What he would do is, after a day at work, would sit down with the Yiddish newspaper from today, with yesterday's daily news, because they would simply translate yesterday's paper into Yiddish, and so that the people who spoke Yiddish could get the newspaper and read it. So he understood that if he put those two papers together, he could use the Yiddish newspaper as the Rosetta Stone and figure out what the English newspaper was saying. So after dinner, they would clear the table, and by candlelight, he would take out a pad and a pencil and the two newspapers, and for hours before bedtime, he would sit there and teach himself English. That's how he learned English. And he considered it an obligation. His kids were forbidden from speaking anything but English when they left the house. And I'm not sure that he was happy if they didn't speak English in the house, because he wanted them to be American. He wanted them to fit into our society, to this country. When the Depression struck, my mother, and neither did my mother nor did my dad's parents, they didn't know each other way back then, nobody said, "We're going back to the homeland, things are tough in America." They were here permanently. They were here for the long haul. And now you have an administration, and that's part of why I say thankfully it's ending. We can count the days ticking away, but not quickly enough. Turning around and telling people, you can come to America from a foreign country, but don't bother learning our language. Don't bother becoming part of this great tapestry. I'm a New Yorker, and I love the fact that you can go from neighborhood to neighborhood and eat authentic food. Whatever your heart desires, we probably have it. If you want Chinese food or Italian food or kosher deli or Japanese food, you name it, we've got it. Jamaican roti, and I've had all this stuff, and I love it. That's part of the excitement of being in New York. You name it, we've got it, and it's probably open 24 hours. And in fact, yesterday I had the privilege of joining a squad of ICE agents. One of my buddies, who I helped to train when he was a brand new agent, is now himself getting close to retirement age, which blows my mind how quickly the clock moves. And he invited me to join him and his squad for a holiday, Christmas, Hanukkah luncheon in Little Italy. Had a great meal. Nothing like it. So that's fine. I love the diversity of culture and music and food and artwork. Excellent. But ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day, if we can't speak a common language, we don't have a country. We have no borders. We have no common language. You have college campuses taking down American flags. You have football players kneeling instead of showing respect to this flag of our nation. And I sit here in wonderment at the stupidity that is befalling the United States. And if the Democrats wonder why they lost the election for the presidency, they need to also wonder why more than two-thirds or about two-thirds of governorships are now held by Republicans, why the Republicans hold control of both houses of Congress. Look at what this administration has done to the United States. And again, I'm not being partisan, but I am being American. Without a common language, we don't have a country. How do we operate in a unified fashion? How do we trust one another when we can't look one another in the eye and speak to each other? In New York State, you can get a driver's license without speaking English or reading English. How in the world is it safe to get on a highway and not be able to read road signs? I would love to know how many accidents have happened because a motorist was confused by the signs because he or she cannot read English. In aviation, by the way, around the world, English is the universal language. There's an understanding that if you're going to fly an airplane, you have to be able to understand what is going on. But in the United States, the country that used to boast the highest literacy rates, we've turned America into a Tower of Babel by design. By design. And so the Democrats are running around like headless chickens. First, they blamed James Comey for Hillary's loss. Then they said, let's have a recount. So Jill Stein, with that absurdity, the woman with the chutzpah to try to hoodwink contributors to give her millions of dollars, with, she had like a 1% vote, and she was going to have a recount and pick up another 40-odd percent, 50% of the vote. Was she delusional or simply a shell for Hillary? Or, you know, I mean, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. So they did the recount in three states, and guess what they found out? Trump actually got more votes after the recount in many cases, and they found, and I believe it was in Michigan, that in three electoral districts, more people voted than were registered to vote. You tell me what that was about. And that was where, you know, Hillary seemed to have done better. So if there was any chicanery committed, it was done by Hillary and company. And if you want to talk about rigging the election, look what she did to poor Bernie Sanders. I don't care if you like Sanders' ideology or politics. That's not the issue. But it was a setup. He was walked into an ambush, the Clinton ambush. But, you know, now the flavor of the month is Russia hacked the computers. The dog ate my homework. Russia hacked the computers. And when the Intelligence Committee asked the CIA and representatives of other intelligence agencies to brief the Congress, which is their right, let's remember the Constitution, they said, we want a briefing. We want to know what evidence you have of hacking. Guess what? They refused to send representatives to testify at the congressional oversight hearings. Refused. We're not going to tell you. Too bad. Take our word for it. We're not going to talk to you. So what evidence do they have? God knows. God knows. Something interesting happened, and I'm writing an article for Front Page Magazine. I presume it will be published next week. There were a couple of Republicans that decided to stand shoulder to shoulder with Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Democratic Party in the United States Senate. Guess who the Republicans were? Lindsey Graham and John McCain. So now let's dig back into our memory banks and ask ourselves, what do those three guys have in common? Schumer, McCain, and Graham. And now I was told perhaps Rubio is now getting in the middle of this food fight also. But let's add Rubio to the list, presuming that is the case. So now what do those four august senators have in common? Time's up. They were all part of the Gang of Eight. When people tell you immigration's not a big issue, and we saw the pollsters play those games, not only is immigration a big issue, it is the biggest, biggest issue, most consequential issue. You cannot name a challenge or threat that one way or another does not have a nexus to the immigration crisis created by the politicians from both political parties. Both parties. Both parties. Look, Carter started the nonsense where we couldn't use the term alien to describe illegal aliens. This was during his administration, followed by Ronald Reagan, who gave us the first amnesty and no more agents. I know conservatives idolize Reagan. I don't. He saddled us with the first amnesty. And I don't always agree with Bill O'Reilly, but on his program, O'Reilly made the point that he did some research because one of the war cries of the conservative loyalists, or I should say really the Reagan loyalists, that afterwards he expressed remorse that it was a terrible mistake, and O'Reilly said, you know what, go check it out. He never said it. Some of the people who worked for him may have said it. He never said it. And I did some digging, and I think O'Reilly is right. See, I don't think Ronald Reagan was foolish. I think he knew what he was doing. And what he was doing was making it easy to bring foreign workers into the United States, which is something that the United States Chamber of Commerce wants. And I would argue that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is one of the most anti-American organizations in the entire country, the side of the Communist Party. They want to flood America with an unlimited supply of foreign workers, foreign tourists, and foreign students. And boy, are they getting their way, and boy, are we getting hammered because of it. So Reagan gave us the first amnesty. And by the way, you may not know this, so here's the jolt. The amnesty of 86 had a provision that prohibited immigration agents from sharing amnesty files with any other law enforcement agency. Think about that. Think of how this encourages fraud. I had an FBI agent come to me one day and say, Mike, I need a file on this guy. He's killed several people. We're concerned he may kill other people. And I had the file. I said, without a court order, I can't show it to you. We need to see it immediately. I said, I can't give it to you. If I give you the file, I'm committing a felony. I can go to jail. I could certainly lose my job. And who gave that gift to us? Ronald Reagan. Followed by Bill Clinton, who gave us the motor voter law. This is all about globalism. And then after 9/11, you had George W. Bush give us the Department of Homeland Surrender. They took the immigration service, bad as it was, and made it infinitely worse. They cut it up into little pieces so the different components of immigration couldn't even talk to each other, couldn't easily share information from one division to another division to other agencies, complicated the whole process. And then George W. made certain to put people in charge of the various components of immigration who didn't come from immigration but came from legacy customs. And customs and immigration have nothing in common other than the fact that they're both border agencies. Customs is concerned with the movement of currency, goods, and products across international borders. Immigration is concerned about the movement of people. So they took people with no background and no inkling and no consideration and no desire to enforce immigration laws, and they put immigration under their authority. Well, what could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? And then you see the 9/11 Commission turn around and say, you know, primarily the 9/11 attacks were the result of failures of the immigration system that enabled the terrorists to enter the United States and then embed themselves, hide in plain sight. Didn't much matter. George W. Bush went down to the border and accused the Minutemen of being vigilantes, stood shoulder to shoulder with Vicente Fox, the Mexican president. And boy, did that make me and a whole bunch of other immigration agents furious. But then when Obama came to office, we became nostalgic for George W. Bush. And look where we now stand. And there was only one candidate from either party who, during the process of the primaries, stood up and said, let's secure our borders and enforce our immigration laws. And thankfully, that candidate will be sworn into office on January the 20th, Donald Trump. And that is why I believe you saw all the anger and the rancor and the name-calling and all the other crazy stuff. Yes, Donald Trump sometimes used language that was not as nuanced as it needed to be. I agree. But principally, what was he fighting for? Secure borders and effective immigration law enforcement. And look at how the Republican Party went nuts. And look at how the Democrats are going crazy right now because they still can't reconcile this idea that we may actually secure our darn borders. If there is anything that Trump said that has everybody going crazy over, it's immigration. Immigration. You know, in the weeks, months, even for a couple of years after 9/11, I was averaging 15 television interviews per month on the networks, CNN, Fox News, ABC, MSNBC. I did one interview on the Today Show. Well, what's happened? When you go to the mainstream media, when was the last time you saw a former immigration agent come on TV when the topic is immigration? Usually, if the topic that they're discussing is, let's say, a space probe that was launched to Pluto, the New Horizons last year, or the Juno satellite that's now orbiting Jupiter, They'll bring in astronomers and former astronauts and scientists and physicists. When the discussion is about cancer, they bring in biochemists and scientists and surgeons and nutritionists, all kinds of experts. Of course, if it's about the military, they bring on people like my good friend, General Paul Vallely, former Navy SEALs, former commanders, and so forth, military folks. But when the topic of conversation is immigration, who do they bring on? If you get someone from law enforcement, with a couple of exceptions, a border sheriff, to continue foisting this BS notion that the only problem that the immigration system has is the lack of security to the Mexican border. And you know, again, if you've been listening to this program or reading my articles, whether it's at capsweb.org or Front Page or The Social Contract, you know we're a country of 50 border states. So it's been lie after lie, misinformation after misinformation. And why? Well, look, most of the broadcast networks have second language subsidiaries. They're thrilled that people come here from other countries. They don't care about gridlock. They don't care about the other stuff that's going on. Because the more people who come here who don't speak English, the more people who come here are going to flip the station to the station that they're broadcasting in that second and third language so they can charge more for advertising when people want to place ads on those networks. Everybody is making out literally and figuratively like bandits over the immigration issue. Except we the people. We are bleeding red and we are bleeding green. We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars a year in remittances, money being wired home to the home countries of foreign workers, both legal and illegal. We're witnessing Americans losing their jobs, Americans suffering wage suppression if they have their jobs. And then the Americans who lose their jobs or suffer wage loss wind up going on safety net programs that cost the U.S. economy a boatload of money. But nobody cares, because it's not their money, so they think. It's America's money, big deal. So Silicon Valley brings in all the people from India. The construction trades are being decimated because of the day laborers who do a lousy job, create terrible problems for the buildings that they get involved with, because these aren't tradesmen. My dad was a tradesman. He was a plumber, worked on new construction. It was a five-year apprenticeship. You're taking day laborers who work for 10 bucks an hour, and do you think that they're going to do the kind of work that my dad did or his friends who were carpenters, bricklayers, electricians, or iron workers do? Of course not. We are slowly but surely turning America into a third world country, and nobody has been more eager to do this to America than the Republicans, or the Democrats, rather. Forgive me. You look at Mayor de Blasio in New York declaring New York City to be a sanctuary for illegal aliens, the city that got hammered the worst on 9/11. Mayor de Blasio says, oh, let's give all these people municipal IDs. And now there's a law that says, well, and we're going to destroy any documentation that illegal aliens may show to get those IDs so that the evil immigration agents can't find it. He needs to be criminally prosecuted. But, you know, it may happen anyway, because apparently now he's under investigation for all kinds of shenanigans with his campaign finance business. The corruption of our politicians goes on as a daily drumbeat. But when I look at the damage being done, and these politicians are remorseless, it just blows my mind. It blows my mind that you have a president of the United States. And I remember Obama was sworn in. These aren't the red states or the blue states. They're the red, white, and blue states, the United States. How united are we if we can't even speak a common language, folks? How united are we? And why in the world is the United States government, which is up to its eyeballs in debt, aiding, abetting, and encouraging more illegal aliens to enter the United States and then provide for their transportation wherever they want to go? In April of this year, there was a hearing held by Trey Gowdy's House Immigration Subcommittee, and I've been before that subcommittee a bunch of times as an expert witness in years past. And I think Trey's trying to do the right thing. I've had a number of conversations with him. He certainly understands the issue. And he held a hearing about criminal aliens in the United States. Again, the Obama administration had released hundreds of thousands of criminal aliens back out onto the street. And when people express this longing, oh my God, we're going to lose Obama, we're going to wind up with Trump. My God, it's the best thing that could happen to America, and in particular, America's minority communities. Look at the massive influx of narcotics and gang members and violence. Heroin addiction running rampant through community after community from coast to coast and border to border. But they had this hearing, and a sheriff from the border state of Maryland, again, we have 50 border states, and this was at that hearing Gowdy held, that sheriff talked about how since 2013, when we had that massive influx every summer, we've seen it, those surges of the unaccompanied minors since 2013 in Maryland. He says that now over 60% of the time when his sheriffs are being called out, his deputies, because there was a crime committed in a school, usually it's a crime of violence, an assault or whatever, involved in committing the crime is one of those kids who came across the border in the surge. So isn't it heartwarming to know that not only has this administration provided those kids with the opportunity to come to the United States, even though they're here illegally, but we're paying for them to travel to Maryland. I'm sure that that sheriff is ecstatic, thrilled to death to know that taxpayer dollars move that kid into his community where his sheriffs have to deal with the crimes that are being committed. And one of the other rulings that this administration came up with, which is wacky, is that people from Latin America are entitled to political asylum. This isn't political asylum. It's economic asylum. And half the world lives below the poverty line. And in fact, the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Bob Goodlatte, held hearings about how the system was being abused, even where the asylum was concerned, because they found members of the Mexican drug cartels had successfully been applied for and were granted asylum in Texas and other border states because they were either fleeing the violence of their competitors in Mexico or coming here to further the interests of the drug cartels they were working for. This is a level of lawlessness that we have never seen in the history of the United States of America. And when Donald Trump stands up and says, let's secure the borders, he gets beaten up. Oh, he's a racist. He's a bigot. And there's lots of swastikas that are being painted on campuses, and everyone is fainting, and these poor school kids are crying like little babies, whimpering. They need a security dog or maybe a security blanket. Does anyone ever realize that colleges are the place that we prepare our young adults for their lives? It's like boot camp for professionals. Boot camp for professionals. And what are we teaching them? Don't listen to anybody who has a different viewpoint. Forget about thinking outside the box. Oh, don't even think outside the one proposition that the administration will offer you. So we have safe areas, safe spaces. So you don't have to listen to anybody who disagrees with you. And they've got to be comforted because they're so distraught, they'll be willing to cancel exams. Can you imagine these kids growing up another 2 years from now, 3 years from now, walking into the corporate headquarters of some corporation and wanting to know if they have any comfort puppies and security blankets that they give out when they're having a bad day? Is there a corner they could sit in and suck their thumbs if they're having stress? This is what our universities are cranking out, and the American people are dopey enough to send their kids to these colleges and spend how much money? And on some of those campuses, the American flag is coming down while we're not even requiring the people who come to America and want to live here speak English. Understand where we are. And everyone that's so distraught at the prospect of a Donald Trump ought to be rejoicing. The Democratic Party used to be the party of labor, used to be the party that represented my dad and the other blue collar workers just like them, the salt of the earth, the men and women who built this country. Not the BS artists, the bank scammers. Goodness, I love when banks talk about the products that they offer. I never knew that three-card Monty was a product. Goodness gracious. So you have people distraught. Oh, my God, Trump is coming. He's a hate monger. And the swastikas are going up. And I'll bet you dollars to donuts that most of those swastikas, if not all of them, are being painted by the not the left, but the lunatic left, the left fringe buckets, so that they can further the claim, just like that girl that went around screaming about how she was attacked because she was wearing Muslim garb. This woman, Yasmin Saweed, it now turns out that nobody attacked her. No one said anything about going home or she was a terrorist and yelling about Donald Trump. I mean, what a story she put together. And Newsweek talks about, oh, we've got to be careful. Maybe she has a problem at home. I want to know who coached her. I really do. Because I don't think she's the only one that's done this. Let's be blunt about it. There are bigots out there. And bigots come in every flavor. This isn't something that's purely about being white. You can be black, green, purple. You can have yellow polka dots and be a bigot. Bigot is tragic. It's unfortunate. It's infuriating. My kids know that that kind of language, that even smells of that stuff, is verboten in my universe. It should be for all of us. But there was nothing that Trump said that anyone should have walked away with and said, oh, this is about bigotry. There are many criminals who come to the United States illegally. That's why they come illegally, because they know that if we could run their fingerprints, we might well find that they're criminals. They might be fugitives from justice. They might be here to get involved with the... So they sneak into the country. Not unlike the burglar who climbs in through your bedroom window when you're not looking, or perhaps when you're not home. The difference between an illegal alien and an immigrant is comparable to the difference between a burglar and a house guest. And all Trump said is, let's keep out the criminals. Let's make sure that when someone's a criminal, we send them packing. And immediately you can hear the screaming, the false narrative. Oh, this is about bigotry. The immigration laws, and I keep making this point, have nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. It's about aliens with dangerous diseases, severe mental illness, aliens who are criminals, spies, terrorists, human rights violators, fugitives from justice, or aliens who are likely to take the jobs of Americans or perhaps wind up on the public dole, wind up as public charges, taking money out of our economy. What is unreasonable about saying, let's make certain that we don't let people into the country who creates a problem for us? Don't we do that with our homes? Don't we look through the peephole before admitting a stranger into our home? But go back to what I said to you at the beginning of my program. Why in the world do you think Lindsey Graham is jumping up and down with John McCain, and now possibly with Rubio, joining Chuck Schumer? Oh, this is terrible. You know, the Russians did it. The Russians did it. Because what unites them is far more important than political party affiliation. It's the desire for open borders. It's the desire to flood America with cheap labor. Understand what we're talking about. Understand that we are educating over 500,000 STEM students in the United States right now, science, technology, engineering, and math. And I'll have more to say and write about it in the coming week. But for those of you who aren't aware of it, China just seized a drone owned by the United States government, an underwater drone. There's been espionage cases involving Chinese and our underwater drone program. They are very interested in our military programs. And if you look at our colleges, China and India by far send us more of those engineering students than any other countries in the world. We are educating the Chinese, and they're going back home, and they're building up their military arsenal. And who do you think the likely adversary is that they're aiming that arsenal at? Us. Are we that stupid? We are educating the people who are our adversaries. How dopey is this? Instead of making certain that we go into the communities of poverty, irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity, but unfortunately, as it is, generally America's minorities are doing far worse economically. But I'm just concerned about Americans who are poor, black, white, green, or purple. I don't care. If you're living in poverty and you have a child, we need to help that child lift himself or lift herself out of poverty. And the best way to do it is through education. But if and only if, when that American comes out of school, they're not competing with a third world worker who brings with him or brings with her third world expectations of wages and working conditions, because that is exactly what is happening. Silicon Valley wants to flood America with as many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of third world programmers and engineers for a good reason, because those folks have greatly reduced expectations of wages and working conditions. But look what this does long term. We're destroying the middle class, and it's the middle class that is the consumer base of America. In fact, it's the consumer base of the world. No one spends money like American middle class citizens. We're the consumers. So where are we? We have over 90 million working age Americans not working, and the Obama administration, lying yet again, says, oh, we've got under a 5% unemployment rate. How great is this? Right. If we ignore a third of our population, a third of our population isn't working, but we'll ignore that, and then we can talk about a 5% unemployment rate or a 4.8 or a 4. It's silly. It's silly. Those numbers are worse than meaningless. They're bold-faced lies, and you have kids on college campuses whimpering like beaten dogs at the prospect that Donald Trump might become the next president, or in fact, that he is going to be the next president now. But this started during the election campaign. Those kids wailing away, oh, we've got to stop Trump. This is scary. What's scary, folks, is the loss of our country. Waiting in the wings to compete with us isn't Canada or Great Britain or Germany or France. I could deal with that, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I like being number one. But the Yankees don't always win. They certainly haven't won this past year. Not that I'm a huge baseball fan. But the point of the matter is that if we lose, if America loses, the free world is gone. Because waiting in the wings are Iran, Russia, China, and ISIS. Possibly go wrong. So for all the breastfeeding on these college campuses of these kids who are too foolish to understand what's really going on, and this is a long-term process. The lies and the BS being spewed by the teachers, take down the flag, and America's a terrible country. America has done some things that I wish America hadn't done. But we corrected ourselves. Slavery was business as usual, and then it stopped 150 years ago. That was that. We tend to correct ourselves far better than any other country on this planet. Does it mean we're perfect? Hell no. But you point a finger at some other country and tell me how great they are. You look at those totalitarian regimes. You know, the people that were cheering, oh, Cuba. Cuba is a totalitarian country. The people were made to suffer terribly under Castro's reign. It was a reign of terror. America does get it wrong, but America rights itself, and its citizens are encouraged to get involved. And now suddenly when people stand up and say, wait a minute, we're doing things wrong, we have safe spaces on college campuses, which is a grab of power. Debate is essential, folks. You know, my degree was communications. I was going to teach debate. I don't believe anybody should be able to get a degree or a high school diploma without spending at least a full year on a debating team. It's the only place where you are taught to ask the questions. In every other class, you're taught to give the answers. You know, I jokingly say that education is a lot like the way they trained Harry Houdini, the escape artist. For those of you not familiar, Houdini's routine was to be locked in cages, and they would drop him into the water, and he'd be tied up with blocks and chains and all kinds of stuff, and he'd get out. He was an escape artist. Well, the way that he was able to escape was he taught himself how to swallow the keys to the locks, and then he could regurgitate them, if I can get the words out, when he needed to. He could spit them up. Well, isn't that the way we are taught from day one in school? They give you a set of facts, and they tell you this is the way it is, and when you're asked the question, spit up the facts we give you. Doesn't matter if they're right or not. This is what you're expected to say. Who discovered America? Christopher Columbus, 1492. How does anybody know that? Was he the one who discovered America? What happened to Leif Erikson? And now we believe that there were people who predated Leif Erikson. But that's the fable of the month, Columbus. And we spit it up and say, that's the way it is. There was a time that they said, well, you know, humans are human because we have opposable thumbs and we work with tools and no other animals can. If you've been following any of the research done on animal behavior, animals use tools also, not the way we do. They don't have factories and lathes and all kinds of machinery to make tools. But the point is, lots of what we think is accurate isn't. Truth is an evolutionary process. Knowledge is an evolutionary process. But the way that we learn is by asking questions. And we're not taught to ask the questions the way we need to, except on the debating team. College campuses used to be synonymous with debate. When you would think about the great universities, you would think about debate. And all of a sudden, debate is being shut down. Why? Because the universities understand that they cannot compete with the truth, that their narrative is false, that what they are spewing are lies. And so if someone comes onto that campus and wants to have that debate, they really can't defend themselves against the truth. You know, John Adams was right. Facts are stubborn things. I've done debates on universities across the country, from Yale Law School to Columbia Graduate School of Journalism and Columbia School of Law and Chapman Law School in Central Washington and Hofstra and NYU and other schools around the country. And no more debates, folks. They don't want debates about immigration. Because, goodness, if someone steps up and says, wait a minute, this isn't about Latinos, this isn't about race, this is about criminals and spies and terrorists, and look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say. And why would college kids be thrilled that we're bringing in more foreign workers legally than the number of new jobs that we are creating? Are those the facts that universities want those kids that are spending so much money on the education to hear? That for all of your efforts, you're probably not going to get that job because you're going to have to compete with somebody from India who will work for a third the wage that you thought you were going to get by getting that advanced degree in science? Because that's what's happening, you know. That's exactly what's happening. So we're being told on the one hand that our schools are incapable of training the engineers and the scientists and the computer programmers we desperately need. Then we come to find out, if you look at the statistics, and I'm going to be writing about it, that over a 500,000 foreign students in the United States right now are studying to be engineers, programmers, and scientists, STEM curriculum. There is no justification for what is being done to the American student, for what is being done to the American family, for what is being done to the middle class. And we still have the sanctuary cities that look at Donald Trump and they're trying to discredit him, trying to discredit those of us who say, wait a minute, those borders need to be secured. Our immigration laws need to be enforced. Oh, that's hateful. No, what's hateful is that those individuals don't care that people are dying as a consequence of aliens who shouldn't be here. Congressman Steve King did a study in reaction to something that I said at a hearing when he had asked me if I knew how many people lost their lives every year because of criminal aliens. And I told him, I said, Congressman, I don't have that number. But my gut tells me that it would be a multiple of the number of casualties that we suffered on 9/11. Well, it made him think, and he went and had a study done by the GAO. My understanding is there were two studies done. And they came to the conclusion that at least 7,000 people every year are being killed by aliens who shouldn't be here, whether it's because of drunk driving or the drug trade or murder or rape or homicides. whatever, people are being killed. 7,000 a year on average, maybe more. 7,000. Thank God we don't lose that number of people on airplanes. You don't see those numbers anywhere else. But you see it where illegal aliens and crime are concerned. And then there's the drug trade. And how many deaths are attributable to the drug trade? Because most gang activity centers around the drug trade. And many of those gang members themselves are here illegally. But yet you have sanctuary cities that shield gang members from detection by immigration. God forbid we should deport gang members. God forbid. And by the way, the most likely victims of the violence that those gang members perpetrate are within those ethnic immigrant communities in which they live. So look at the lunacy, the amount of money being spent to move illegal aliens into the communities where they want to live, which, again, if you or I did it, would be considered a crime, yet they do it, and everything is honky-dory. And then you find out when you read this article that because of the amount of money that was being spent by Obama, other money is not being made available to do other things. Here, in fact, is what's in the Breitbart article. 25% of ICE's $100 million spending was on hotel rooms for the illegals, and 58% is spent on plane tickets. The government is burning through taxpayer cash, according to the Washington Times. This study was done, by the way, because of a request repeatedly made by the Immigration Reform Law Institute. And what's really pathetic, they were talking about $665 per juvenile, per flight, and so forth. But now here's something that I have to point out to you. The relentless surge of migration also means domestic programs that help vulnerable Americans being cut to fund the migration. Okay? The Democratic administration slashed funds from cancer research, disability services, to spend at least $167 million so that HHS can feed, house, clothe, transport, and amuse, entertain the migrants. $167 million, cutting research for cancer research. Schools that have been doing a great job of early intervention with children who have autism, they're losing their funds. This is not victimless. Americans keep on paying the price for our open borders. Donald Trump comes along and says, let's end the madness, and you have all this breastfeeding on the campuses. If those kids are unable to figure this out, then they've wasted their time on what they thought was an education, because they sure as hell are not educated. That's about as dumb as it gets. We should be operating on behalf of our own best interests, the best interests of Americans, irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity. The narrative is a false one, and I cannot believe how many Americans continue to fall for it. Help is on the way. January 20th is coming. We should be rejoicing at the prospect that our borders will be made secure, that our immigration laws will be enforced, and hopefully we can get things back on track. This isn't about left or right, ladies and gentlemen. Definitely, however, this is about right or wrong. You know, I just want you to know that it's always wonderful joining you at the end of the week so that we can, as I like to say, play that game of catch-up. It's important that we pay attention to what's going on. The United States got itself into the mess that it's in now, in large measure because all too many of our fellow Americans have been asleep at the switch. Those politicians are paid for by us, we the people. They are supposed to represent us, we the people. They have not been. They have not been doing what has been in the best interests of the United States or of the citizens of the United States. They've been taking the money, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from Silicon Valley, from the American Immigration Lawyers Association, from a slew of special interest groups that could not care less about the average American. It's time that we change it. And the way to change it is by getting involved in government, making those politicians accountable, getting them to understand that we are not as stupid as they hope that we are. It'll take some work, take a bit of lifting. That's the work Americans must do, and that's the purpose of my program, to try to provide you the information that you're not going to get anyplace else. If you like the show, please tell your friends, your neighbors about my program. Please tell them to go to my personal website, Michael Cutler, MichaelCutler, one word, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, front page magazine. And I hope you guys all have a wonderful weekend coming up. And I'm looking very much forward to seeing you here on the Michael Cutler Hour next week at the same time. Good night, everybody. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport.